Morning, everyone, and welcome. As we advance into Thanksgiving week, am I totally experiencing a holiday-related sort of senioritis? Yes, probably. But we do have a few exciting things. One is our rundown, which is packed full of interesting stories. The other is our secret weapon, who joins us now. Nina Turner, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, John. You're gonna run out of labels for me in a minute.
Yeah, no, I got. There's a thesaurus online. I can keep Googling. Very glad to have you here. We got a lot to talk about. A few of these stories are real doozies, but at the very least, I'm glad that you're the one that I'm going to be breaking it down with.
Well, I'm glad to be with you and the squad, the Dragon.
We're glad to have you here. And for the squad, we actually have some things for you to do right now. I mean, obviously, the same stuff as always. If you could hit the like button, share the stream, that would be great. But also, we want to know what you think about a couple different things. So the first is on Tuesdays, we generally do polls. And we decided, like with our top 10 list yesterday with Brett Ehrlich, we would make this Thanksgiving themed. And we actually got into a bit of a debate during that top 10 list where I had put on my list of my favorite Thanksgiving foods the apparently controversial choice of creamed corn. Nina, what are your immediate reactions to creamed corn? Pro or anti?
I had no idea cream corn was controversial. I mean, what is happening in the world?
Dang. I don't know. Brett lost it. So I decided, well, this is a democracy, technically, sort of. So I'm going to poll Twitter. And I polled them about cream corn. Love it. Got 27% of the vote. Hate it. Got 32% of the vote. And 40% said meh. And I'll accept the results of our poll. But we decided we're going to do a special poll for everyone out there. So right now at tyt.com/polls, we've decided to do a Royal Rumble of the Thanksgiving side dishes. So you can head to tyt.com/polls and vote. Your choices are stuffing, mashed potatoes, green bean casserole, which I have discovered has vegetables in it, so ew, mac and cheese, and cranberry sauce. And at the end of the show, we're going to reveal the most loved Thanksgiving side. So everybody go. This is the most important poll we've ever done. So please, tyt.com/polls.
Nina, I'm already hurt, John. I'm already hurt? Disappointed because there are no desserts on there.
I know. Tomorrow we'll do all desserts too. Well, see, that's okay. The thing about my yam cranberry marshmallow casserole. It's a side, but let's keep it real. It's a dessert.
Yes. But and I like cream corn for the record, though. I'm
thank
throw
you.
That out there. I don't know about it for Thanksgiving, but corn rocks in my world.
Well, let me ask you this question. At the risk of potentially biasing the poll, out of those five sides, what would you choose?
Well, you don't have my side on there. So
what's that?
If you force me, I mean, got to have some collard greens, baby. Some collard greens.
No, we've got some blind spots.
Y'all got some blind. Well, but mac and cheese. If you make me choose from the list, got to have mac and cheese.
I threw out a cornbread as a possibility. I think it should be on there. I also think rolls should be on there. I think those are pretty important. Soaking up gravy and stuff.
All carbs are important during Thanksgiving.
Exactly, that is true. I love mashed potatoes. You can get a pile of mashed potatoes. Anyway, as much as I would like to just talk about food, I am getting very, very hungry and I'm salivating a lot. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna move on to the news in a minute. But first, hit that poll. Oh, also, tomorrow, Garbage People with Jared Jackson for Big News Wednesday, Garbage People of the Week. That poll should be up on our community tab of the YouTube channel too. So go have fun with your homework, but don't go anywhere because we're about to launch into a bunch of news. Nina, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. Oh, geez.
You're sighing.
It's not a great block. Kyle Rittenhouse, fresh off of his acquittal, making him innocent, decided to sort of explain himself, plead his case. In front of a media figure that doesn't say, his choice doesn't say anything about him or his politics or anything. He's just talking to Tucker Carlson. And so their interview is now, parts of it are now being released. And here is the first bit of that interview.
Well, it actually started on August 24th. I was working my job as a lifeguard at the Recplex in Kenosha County. And then the riots were still going on and a curfew was implied. So I went to Dominic Black's house and I stayed the night over there. And saw the videos of the riots and the arson going on.
What'd you think of it?
It was upsetting because Kenosha is my community.
Despite the fact that that first trial has ended, the defense continues. And let's be clear, that's why Tucker Carlson had him there to reassure his base that he's in favor of vigilante violence, which you don't need to do, Tucker, we get it. And to continue their defense, that this isn't about him, it's not about race, it's just about the Second Amendment. Nina, what'd you think about that?
I mean, it's Tucker Carlson at his usual. You and him, I got to see you two rumble. I mean, really. Totally off topic. But no, I mean, we're not surprised that Tucker would do that. It's just painting the picture as they want it to be painted. You're absolutely right. It is a continuation of the trial. It is let me go out there and continue to make people feel as though I had nothing to do whatsoever with what transpired that day, that I am the victim, basically. I mean, that's what this is.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And honestly, like, so we were talking about this yesterday on the show. Kyle Rittenhouse is such, I think, such an irrelevant part of this from the point of view of Tucker Carlson and Fox News. Like, they're gonna use him, but it's all about the mission going forward. What can they take out of Kyle Rittenhouse? What lessons can they try to make their audience learn from it? And that's why they're doing so much. Just PR for him. They're not just
saying, oh no, I think he has a strong self-defense case while the case is going on, while they're filming a documentary with him and not telling people that they're doing that. They're also literally just saying things like, what a sweet kid. I think that comes through loud and clear. Imagine putting that kid in jail. Well, I can imagine. I don't think of myself as that imaginative person, but he did kill a few people, so I can imagine it.
I mean, they continue to stoke the flames on this, John, and it is a picture that they're painting that is going to further, you know, tear this country apart. It is who is deserving and who is not. Who has a right to petition government and who does not? Who has a right to walk down the street armed and who does not? Who gets a second, third, fourth look and who does not? There are many, many lessons, you know, in this case, no matter which side people come down on. You know, whether or not the jury did their job. The jury was given specific instructions. I do believe that the judge was the sixth man on the court. I am definitely not, you know, hiding the fact that I definitely see it that way. Laying this at the feet of the jury, I don't think is the answer here. The jury answered as they were given the instructions. The bigger lesson here is what are we going to do about this moving forward to cement a justice within a legal system that does not have much of it for Black people and brown people. And then if we keep going, you know, poor people of all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you about the judge being the sixth man. We have another judge to be the seventh woman, actually. Jeanine Pirro, continuing that defense thing they're doing, says, this young man is far more intelligent than people wanted to give him credit for. This is a young man who is a very empathic young man. This young man is a truth teller. This young man is far more mature than his years. Carlson said he's exactly the kind of person you would want many more of in your country. He's literally saying he wants more vigilante killers. So we get what they're doing, but let's get a little bit more into the interview. Kyle Rittenhouse goes on to talk about turning himself in.
I wanted to turn myself in Kenosha. I wanted to turn myself into the police in Kenosha, but I wasn't able to because they weren't accepting visitors, apparently, with the barricades and the fence up. So we ended up turning myself into the Antioch Police Department.
So you drove back across state lines, as we're now calling it. Funny. So you couldn't even turn yourself in.
No, it was like I had to go to Antioch Police Department, which to my understanding is the closest police department to Kenosha.
Yeah, so when he fled back home and then eventually was found, it was the most convenient one. I mean, what are you supposed to do? This happens a lot to mass shooters. They just can't get arrested. They just can't find anyone. And it's weird. He was so stressed out from what had happened that we want to show you an opportunity that he narrowly missed. So let's take a look at this.
So I guess those flashing lights, he probably thinks it's like a carnival or something. Maybe it's an arcade. He's not sure. There's a cop car. There's a cop car. He's just gonna keep going. And they don't have a problem with him having that gun because they've clocked his skin color. They're perfectly fine with it. He just keeps going and then drove across state line. I guess that's what we're saying. We're pretending that that's significant, which I will in any other case. I don't know. I don't know what he should have done, Nina. He just wanted to turn himself in. And how are you supposed to get that done?
I just don't understand how he was able to. Well, I do understand. So let me not just. Let me not pretend that I don't, but he should have never been able to leave that scene after not just shooting people, but killing people, even if his defense is self-defense, which we know that's what it was. How I don't know many people that would have been able to get away with, you know, shooting two people, let alone killing two people, and then being able to leave on their own volition, go home, cross the state lines, as Tucker wants to make light of, and then decide how they're going to turn themselves in.
Yeah, I 100%. And it's just I've been trying to drill into my head that while we might, that I might on the show, I can only speak for myself, I might on the show try to imply that we should have standards that are like relatively concrete, that we treat people in the same way, like situations are treated like. That they don't do that, and they don't value that, and they don't care about that. So I just want people coming out of this thinking, oh, so we've learned something about the right. They believe in the inalienable right to self-defense. No, they don't. They don't. Like, what? So the guard that shot Ashley Babbitt when she was trying to get past him, they were rioting, they were looting, all that stuff that Tucker Carlson cares about when it's in Kenosha. Was he not defending himself? So I just imagine one way you could just melt down the whole right. So what if Ashley Babbitt had been coming at Kyle Rittenhouse? How would they, because she was perfect and a patriot. He's perfect and a patriot, opposite sides of the same situation. But of course, it doesn't matter because they do not expect for themselves, let alone for their representatives in politics and media, that they will be anything other than massive hypocrites if being hypocritical helps them to make their case to attain or keep power. That's all it's about. Like, we, Ahmaud Arbery didn't have a right to defend himself. Trayvon Martin didn't have a right to defend himself. None of them do because these aren't standards. They saw Kyle Rittenhouse and they thought, I like him. He seems like a right winger. He did the right thing. That is the only lesson to come out of this. And that is a depressing thing. We should be able to expect that people will have values. That if they have an ideology, it should be relatively concrete, but that just isn't the case now, if it ever was. Sorry, never, I know that was. I'm being fraud, but what do you think?
No, John, this is the time. You know, matters like this, what the Ahmaud Arbery case, a lot of cases, even before this is the time. It's been the time, it's past the time. And you really hit the nail on the head. Are we meeting out justice equally? Mm-hmm. The answer is hell no. So now the question becomes, how many more examples do we need? And what are the collective we going to do about it?
Yeah. Well, Kyle Rittenhouse in his interview with Tucker Carlson also brought up some of the legal troubles he's had, the fundraising troubles, talking about his interactions with Lynn Wood and John Pierce. So basically, Lynn Wood is the lawyer that was involved with Trump and all the stuff around the election, everything. And he was also involved with Kyle Rittenhouse. So here's what happened.
He held me in jail for 87 days, disrespected my wishes, put me on media interviews, which I should never have done, which he said, oh, you're going to go talk to the Washington Post, which was not a good idea, along with John Pierce. They said I was safer in jail instead of at home with my family. And then after I'm bailed.
Your lawyer said that.
My lawyer said that. John Pierce and Lynn Wood.
87 days is a long time to be in jail.
It was very long. I lost a lot of weight in there. I since then gained it back.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. 87 days of not being with my family for defending myself and being taken advantage to, being used for a cause by John Pierce and Lynn Wood. trying to trying to raise money so they can take it for their own benefit, not trying to set me free.
Yeah, you can tell there how sick of being used for a cause Kyle Rittenhouse is as he sits down for an extended interview with Tucker Carlson. Also, like sometimes you'll have like a crazed televangelist who literally looks like a demon, and I always wonder how it is that the whole grifty thing doesn't come through to their parishioners or whatever. That laugh by Tucker Carlson, how does that not clue anyone into how deranged he is as an individual? This is a kid who you may think that he was right to defend himself. He did just kill a bunch of people. So the laughing about the weight loss, it's a lot of time to be in prison. So I imagine Tucker Carlson is going around the country and spotlighting people who've been in jail for literally years for shoplifting, have been wrongfully convicted and have spent their lives in prison. No, probably it's just Kyle Rittenhouse. That's where the extent of his empathy goes.
That's it. And in lies the problem. Right there. It was summed up in that short segment of that entire interview right there.
Yeah. By the way, Linwood almost certainly did steal money and used him to raise money for himself. Here's one clue that you could have had. It's Linwood. Like you got involved with one of the, I cannot believe that he's literally a lawyer, but he's obviously an insane conspiratorial grifter. At some point there's gotta be some personal responsibility when you choose him as your legal representative. I wouldn't wish his representation on anyone.
I mean, you know, or his family. I mean, he's still 18.
Maybe he didn't choose.
You know, I mean, right. Even though I definitely don't like this situation whatsoever, but you got an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old, 18-year-old at the helm. You know, where are his parents or the adults or people that are growner than he is, let me say that, guiding him through that. And many a lawyer, not just in this case, just generally speaking, many a lawyer has ripped off people and, you know, and utilized them in ways that are not right, that none of us, whether we like this case or not, would say was acceptable.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that he did in this case. But I also think if your whole point is supposed to be like, how dare you imply that this kid is like anything other than a good kid? He just, you know, the family chose Linwood as his lawyer and Tucker Carlson as his first big interview. Don't draw any lessons from this or anything. Sorry, I can't shut off my brain in that way. Anyway, oh, by the way, we showed you a video yesterday of him saying that he supports BLM and he's not in any way a racist. Well, the social media accounts of Black Lives Matter have replied to that. Here is a tweet that they put out. Some of it is gonna have to be blurred, but I don't think that they buy the explanation and neither do I. Any thoughts about that? The belief that he's a BLM supporter.
I mean, what does that even mean?
I don't know.
When you went there, they knew that the people who were protesting were doing so to stand up for Black lives. A Black man who had been shot, what was it, 7 times? John in the back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why people were protesting. So I don't get it. He certainly didn't come there on that side for sure.
100%.
So it's awfully convenient now to say you support the Black Lives Matter movement.
100%. Okay, I think that's enough of those two. We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, we arguably have worse people, but we've been noticing a bit of a trend in how right wingers are talking about these incidents. And I wanna see if you can pick up one of the commonalities. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everybody, so we're gonna launch into a video in just one sec, but I do wanna let you know, the people we're gonna be showing you, the things they're gonna be saying are awful. I believe that they know what they're doing. I believe that there is a point that can be made out of analyzing it, but I do apologize for exposing you, especially in a holiday weekend, to these awful, awful people. But here is a little bit, let's jump into this.
Third parties are influenced in this case. They've been doing it from the gallery in this courtroom. They've been doing it outside. This is what a public lynching looks like in the 21st century, with all due respect. Just because they haven't put a gallery up, they haven't put a podium up outside with a hangman's noose on it, doesn't mean that this isn't a trial, despite the best efforts of this court. This isn't a trial that's been infected by mob violence of a woke left mob.
Okay, so that is one of the defense attorneys for the McMichaels, the white defense attorney of the white men who hunted down and killed Ahmaud Arbery. And he is concerned that his white defendants are the target of a lynch mob and mob violence. And he made that case, knowing he was being videotaped, to a courtroom. He thought he was making a damn good point. Nina Turner, what do you think?
Yeah, the microaggressions that black people are experiencing right now from this entire case and everything else that's going on, between him saying what he said, and then I know we're gonna play video of the lady, attorney. I mean, too many black preachers in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just really feeling themselves right now. Just they don't care. It is all up. I guess if there's anything good about what they have said, is that they are out in the open with it. They are leaving no doubt how they feel about black people, how they feel about Ahmaud Arbery's life. His life did not matter to these folks, and they on full display. Absolutely. Yeah. And the term lynching, and to cavalierly use the term lynching without thinking about the historic significance of lynching and who exactly is facing a lynch mob, his client, mm-hmm. or was it Ahmaud Arbery?
Yeah, you know what you're doing. He knows what he's doing. Exactly. He knows what he's doing. And he decided to do it. He went there planning, I'm gonna make this point. I'm going to take the three men who got together in a truck with guns and hunted down and killed an unarmed, innocent black man. And they're going to be the victims of a lynch mob. And I'm going to make that case to
the entire case. I'm sorry. He's been doing it the entire case, though.
Yeah, he has been. And he's doing it to a jury that is 11/12 white. The only thing I disagree with you on is it doesn't seem like it can be classified as a microaggression at this point. Like that is.
Well, you're right. Maybe I was too light on that. Yeah, you're right. Ooh. Go bigger.
No, you're right with the terminology, but they know what they're doing. So let's demonstrate that with another lawyer. So you refer to this video. Here's another lawyer in the same case.
Turning Ahmaud Arbery into a victim after the choices that he made does not reflect the reality of what brought Ahmaud Arbery to Satilla Shores in his khaki shorts with no socks to cover his long, dirty toenails.
Nina?
I'm John. There was a book written in the early part of the 20th century. I think it was in the 1900s, and it's called The Negro, the Beast. It was written by Charles Carroll. I swear to you, when I close my eyes and I listen to that person talk, I feel like I'm reading that book. Because mm-hmm. Charles Carroll in this book intimated that God created black people lesser than white people, and that we were just a little higher than the apes. I swear to God, listening to her. And I'm trying to stay so PG right now. It sounded just like that. How dare, and his action, walking, jogging, happened upon a construction site, kind of peeking in, looking around, his action, while men are chasing him down, they even recorded as, these are not their exact words, but basically saying, we got him trapped. I think they said something like, we got him trapped like a rat. So his action, but the way she described him, he's dead. So now she makes him the aggressor.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. In what world? You know what? In America.
Yeah.
And this, and the saddest part about this is not the first time. And this will not be the last. Dehumanizing Ahmaud Arbery.
I don't even know what to say to that video. I mean, thankfully you made so many good points. It's madness. It's just madness. Like, I'm glad that you referenced that book, because like we think because we have smartphones that everything's different. No. Juries are selected in the exact same way. Victims are portrayed as the aggressors in the exact same way. We showed you like a year or two ago, but we showed those old articles from the New York Times that were advancing this idea that black men are basically like the Hulk. Like, they're presented as massive, unstoppable monsters. These are like articles from the 50s and stuff. No, same thing. It's the same thing. We have nicer technology, but that's about it. They're talking. It's not like this almost bothers me more. The lynching thing, I understand what he's doing. He is trying to trigger the psychological weakness in all of these white people that have been trained to think that they should be the victims. How dare anyone remind them of ongoing racism and structural and individual and all that. Toniel's thing is one of the craziest things I've ever heard in a courtroom. And as you were pointing out before, it's just the latest insane thing to happen in this individual trial. And it's just day after day after day. And we have to see that video, and we have to see the toenails video. We have to look at the composition of the jury and the no more black pastors. And then some of the people with the biggest audiences getting paid tens of millions of dollars a year will look into a camera for an audience of millions of white people and say, racism doesn't exist. I mean, after all, we elected Obama as if they voted for him. And it drives you insane. And I think it's intended to, Nina. I think it's intended to make us just think, well, I can't pay attention to this. I can't watch this day after day. I will lose my goddamn mind.
No, it is. I mean, again, somebody, was not my quote, but it is a classic. And I think it is timeless that America should be happy that black people only want justice and not revenge. This is a replay. You're talking about repeats, encores. Over and over again, because as a country, we have never dealt with this. And when you have, like you laid out, people who have the biggest platforms ever, this century is even more dangerous because we have that technology to continue to propagate these damn lies. And that is what they are. And thank God this is PG, because all kinds of words are coming to my mind right now. I do speak another language, baby. Yeah. And I speak it very well. And that attorney, and I am being, I am trying to hold myself together. The nurse, and she knew exactly what she was doing too, because for that jury, she's gonna draw a picture of somebody that is a beast, somebody that is not deserving of justice, somebody that is not like one of us. And he caused his own death. Are you kidding me? Fill in the blank.
100%. Yeah, and there shouldn't be, nor will there be, any equality. So the disgusting murderers, the McMichaels, what was their breath like that day? Had they flossed the night before?
Hello.
Did they wipe their ass? How dirty were they when they decided to pick up a shotgun and blow a hole through a person? How clean were they? Had they combed their hair? Had they worn a shirt 2 days running? What did they smell like that day when they decided to kill Ahmaud Arbery? Oddly enough, she didn't get into it. Weird how that works out. But anyway, unfortunately, those were not the only two videos we've got for you. The weird attempt to accrue this constant victimhood for people who get away with literal killing of people continues. Matt Walsh, one of the many clones of Ben Shapiro, was responding to Kyle Rittenhouse explaining that he supports BLM, and take a look at how he decides to address that comment.
So I wouldn't criticize him at all after everything he's been through to say that. Still, it does show what sort of stranglehold leftist grievance organizations like BLM have. That even Kyle Rittenhouse, after BLM, I mean, they are the ones who tried to lynch him. They are the lynch mob here.
So yeah, that's Matt Walsh. Again, every white person is constantly being lynched. Just the white people, mind you, but they're constantly being lynched. And he knows what he's doing when he does that. And I have a little bit of empathy. I mean, if you're trying to compete with people like Ben Shapiro, and you're not clever, you're not funny, you're not intelligent, you have to be the most awful. So it's like his deck is just filled up with white people get lynched, white people get lynched. We're the ones who actually are the targets of racism. That's the only thing that they have to draw an audience. And so you're gonna hear more of this, Nina. We've already heard it so many times. It's a big problem in America, historically, white people being lynched.
Oh yeah. Disregard the fact that black people bore the brunt of the majority of lynchings in this country 100%. Just simply based on their race. That is not to say historically some white people did not get lynched, they did. But in the way that they are using lynching, they are disregarding, as a matter of fact, just kind of throwing out the historic realities of this country. And it is really sad, John, because they are perpetuating, you want to talk about a big lie, they are perpetuating a big lie. Again, the good, the bad, and the ugly sides of this country, its original sin was enslavement of Africans and then their descendants, generation after generation after generation. And even in the modern era, as we see right now, even in the 21st century, those remnants are still there, because we are talking about systems. They're talking about individuals. We're talking about systemic racism, systemic hate, and they just don't get it. They just, and they don't want to get it either.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh my God, John, just the fact that people can do this, this is a total misrepresentation. And I'm being kind by using the word misrepresentation. Mm-hmm. And the reason why the Black Lives Matter movement was born in the first place, it is really another iteration in our lifetime of the civil rights movement. It's another iteration of all the black freedom fighting movements that came before it. Jesus Christ.
Well, look, you, I think, 100% rightly tied this back to the legacy of slavery. Even that, though, isn't beyond their desperate attempts to continually portray themselves across all issues as victims, as you will see. Here we have Dennis Prager, who's paid by millionaires and billionaires to try to delude and bamboozle young people on Twitter and TikTok and YouTube and all that. Here he is talking about slavery.
But you see, they have a monopoly on victimhood. There are no non-left-wing victims. That's what they believe. However, I would argue that the unvaccinated are bigger pariahs. Were AIDS or gays or people with AIDS banned from travel? Were they banned from restaurants? Were they fired from their jobs? Were they deprived of a way of feeding their family? The unvaccinated are the most hated group since slavery. Tell me who would be equivalent.
I guess he's at least admitting that it was bad to be a slave. I mean, he's one of the few right wingers that isn't trying to pretend that it was actually a great thing or whatever. Credit for mixing it up. Normally, they compare themselves to those who were murdered by the Nazis during the Holocaust. He's going a little bit further back in history. But again, there's nothing they won't co-opt to present their own actions as making them the true victims.
These people are sick. That's absolutely it. Sick.
And they're probably gonna be back in charge in about a year. And they're probably gonna be back in the White House in a couple of years. Let's quickly jump into this. We're gonna zoom out a little bit. The International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance has for a very long time been rating democracies and trying to give us an idea of the state of democracy and authoritarian countries around the globe. Well, excitingly, for the first time, they've added the United States to their list of backsliding democracies. They pointed to a visible deterioration that the group said had begun in 2019. Now, they still classify us as a democracy, so that's cool. They say we're a high performing democracy, and we even improved our performance in indicators of impartial administration on things like corruption and predictable enforcement back in 2020. However, declines in civil liberties and checks on government indicate there are serious problems with the fundamentals of democracy. They say there was a historic turning point back in 2020 to 2021 when Trump questioned the legitimacy of the 2020 election. But beyond that, there was a decline in the quality of freedom of association and assembly during the summer of protests in 2020 after the police killing of George Floyd. They say the visible deterioration of democracy in the United States as seen in the increasing tendency to contest credible election results. And we've seen that in multiple elections since 2020. The efforts to suppress participation in elections and the runaway polarization is one of the most concerning developments. So, hey, America's changing. How exciting, Nina.
Yeah, for the worse. I mean, the points that they're making about the, especially on the voting, voter access or voting access is right on the money. We know that Republican controlled legislatures all across this country are making it harder for people to actually exercise their right to vote. And when you couple that with the fact that government has been failing the people in this country, especially on the federal level of government, the whole notion of those two, the confluence of those two things together is definitely ripe for what you and I and so many others believe is going to happen during the 2022 midterms, much to our chagrin.
Yeah. And you know, we've seen this obviously throughout the year in terms of the voter suppression bills and all that. You know, multiple states have legalized, like, hey, if protesters are in the road, you can run them down. You can just kill them. Yes. Like, it's just inconvenient to have those protesters there. I mean, if it's ever a right wing protest, try to exercise that. But right. No, don't. But then also, we're now in the process of gerrymandering. So Georgia. A state that Biden won narrowly, but won, indicating that it's shifting blue. It's more than 50% of its vote went for the Democrats. In their new map, more than 80% of the seats are going to go to Republicans. So years of demographic change, as well as the great work of organizations in registering people to vote, getting them excited and interested in politics and all that, changing the fundamentals of politics in Georgia that resulted in two Senate seats in 1 year going for the Democrats. That was a fun experience. And now that's done because they've locked in automatic Republican seats to dominate that state delegation. Has nothing to do with platforms or policy or anything like that. They've just given themselves those seats. So they don't even need to steal those elections when an actual election comes. It's virtually impossible that the craziest conspiracy theory, loving QAnoner that they put up for election is almost certainly going to win. Like, it doesn't matter what people think in that area, Nina.
No.
And this is how you backslide as a democracy. One state at a time, one bill at a time.
I mean, he or she who controls the pen controls. I would just add to that report that really this started happening in 2010. There was a big backlash. You know, linked to the election of the first African-American president. Republican controlled legislatures lost their minds. We were at a census point again in 2010. Lines being redrawn in 2011 impacted the 2012 election cycle. I was in the Ohio legislature at the time, remember it like it was yesterday. As a matter of fact, I voted against those maps for these reasons. And now we have a repeat. And John, some of this is at the feet. I mean, they don't have to gerrymander and both parties do it. But it is the worst by far under the type of technology that we have. Yeah. But let me think, did Democrats not know that 2022 was on the way? I mean, we cannot continue to just focus on the presidency and the Congress and not give a damn about who is running for state legislatures and putting the requisite investment on state level. Secretary is the state. And who is running for state legislatures so we don't find ourselves again 10 years from now having the same conversation? Because the Republicans have been very clear about what their mission and their assignments are, and they are executing their mission with laser precision. But on the other side of that, Democrats are not doing the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, you're totally right to point out that the Democrats gerrymander as well. We've pointed that out in multiple things. Whenever I like tweet about gerrymandering, some Republican will be like, "Yeah, Democrats do it too." And I always wonder, like, so what do you know that I want to stop gerrymandering?
Right.
You know that would stop the Democrats from doing it. Like, you seem to be agreeing with me, but you're really aggressive about it.
Hello.
Yeah, let's end it. And that, by the way, is where I'm gonna end my commentary at least. Like, the Republicans are doing this, and they're doing it worse. They're doing it with more obvious partisan intent as well as racial animus. But they're going to do that. I'm not going to ask them to stop and expect that that's going to work. They're going to do it as much as they can. The Democrats could stop it. They're not. So at the end of the day, is it the Republicans' fault? Yeah, kind of. But if the Republicans were doing it and the Democrats could stop it and choose not to, I'm going to be pretty mad about them. They're not even willing. Like, I get the people that are benefiting from manipulating the system are going to keep doing it. Why are the people who are being hurt by the manipulation of the system allowing them to continue? I think we should be more angry at them.
There it is.
Pass it, get rid of the filibuster. They're not
get
going to.
Get rid of it.
They're just going to allow
get
it. They're just going to allow
rid
it.
Of it. Stop playing. Oh, my Lord. Yeah, John, this is a day.
Yeah. Okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna take a short break. We come back, we got more to talk about. Don't go anywhere. I think we can fit all of this in and then talk about Thanksgiving sides. Let's jump into this video.
There were reports that President Biden was telling allies that he's gonna run for re-election in 2024. Can you confirm, is he gonna run in 2024? Is he telling staff that?
Yes, that's his intention.
Jen Psaki dropping another bomb. Oh my God, Biden's gonna run again. Praise, I don't know, something. What does it even mean a couple of years before an election to say that a guy who's, I think, 96 is gonna be running in a few years? Look, I mostly just wanted to briefly talk about this because we have Nina on. Nina, first of all, do you even believe that her saying it means anything about his actual intention to run? And either way, if he is the nominee right now, from the perspective we have right now, how does that make you think about 2024?
Well, we need to deal with the problems right now. I mean, that's the standard line. So let's just get that out the way. Every president intends, for the most part, to run again. So she just gave the standard line. That's just it. Newsflash, that's what any press secretary would say, unless it would have to be drastic for them to say something otherwise. Before we jump to 2024, though, damn it, can we deal with what's happening in 2021? And what is going to happen in 2022? That's what I want to see. I want to see some real changes in material conditions to have people excited and exhilarated about actually voting in 2024. 2024 is going to take care of itself. You know, there is a senator in Georgia, John, as you mentioned, and the other two senators won. One of those senators, Senator Warnock, is up in 2022. Yeah. So can we kind of like deal with 2022 first before we get on a high horse talking about 2024? It's the standard line. It's nothing to get excited about.
Yeah, and if not Warnock, like I can't even conceive of who could end up holding these seats over the next 2 to 4, 6 years. Look, I would say honestly, like if they want to be thinking about that and they want people to be excited about it, and I saw some people on Twitter that were really excited about it, and I can't put myself in that headspace, then wouldn't you want to do something big? Wouldn't you want to deliver? A lot of young people voted in 2020. I'm gonna guess the numbers are gonna go down. Wouldn't you wanna do something perhaps to excite young voters and give them a reason to come out and give you a continuing congressional majority to want to be active in the run up to 2024?
Because like, if the Republicans take over, they're going to shut down literally anything from happening after the next few years. That is almost a guarantee. And if we do have Biden, we might not have much of a contested primary. I hope that we do regardless. But so then you don't have that driving enthusiasm and excitement. But there are gonna be like 7 people voting in 2024 if they don't do anything and then lose Congress and then don't have a contested primary. My God, they're setting us up for a bad couple of years here, Nina.
I don't want to live in that world you just painted, John. Not at all. I'm not coming there with you. I'm not coming to that place. I mean, in some areas, the voter turnout was very low. My hometown of Cleveland, Ohio, in 2020, you would not have known that there was a presidential election because the voter turnout was low. Why was it low? Depressed because people are not seeing changes in their lives or their livelihoods. That could very well be, as we know, the reality in 2022. Because even with Biff, even with the B to the third power, as I call it, what is it going to take to have that those policies really impact? And don't even get me started on how much more watered down they are than when they started too. And my God, we know that B to the third power still has to go through the Senate. And Lord only knows what they're going to do to it then. John, I'm just kind of old fashioned. You ought to give people something to vote for. I mean, that's.
You're crazy, Nina. Stop it with the crazy talk.
And instead of just thinking that people are obligated to vote for you just because. Yeah,
100%. Okay, really fast, let's jump into this. It's even a little bit more out, but I just sometimes need good news. So I'm gonna try to deliver a little bit of good news. Kyrsten Sinema has hardly endeared herself to her voters over the past year or so, to some constituents perhaps, the Republicans. So wanna talk about some of the most recent polling for Kyrsten Sinema, who has spent the last year trying to stop Joe Biden from accomplishing literally anything. 72% of Democrats said they would prefer a different Democrat to represent the party when she runs for re-election. Just 26% say they'd prefer Ms. Sinema. Interestingly, 48% of Republicans view her favorably to 45% unfavorable. She's above water amongst Republicans. Democrats, it's 42% favorable, 47% unfavorable. This just seems something wrong about that when the other party likes you more than your party does. I don't know. I'm not an elected senator. Maybe I'm stupid. But and the result of this, if we could jump ahead, is that against potential primary challenges, Representative Ruben Gallego, 47% said they'd support him to 24% for Sinema. Greg Stanton leads her as well. Superintendent of Public Instruction Kathy Hoffman leads her by 20 points. Now her election is years away. It's a long way away, unfortunately. But when like you can name virtually anyone who lives in that district or in that state, and they say they'd prefer them to you, that should be a sign that you're doing something wrong in what's at least ostensibly still a backsliding democracy.
Indeed, John. I'm just glad that Democrats in Arizona get it, and Republicans do. Basically, Republicans are saying, "Give us back our, give us our person. She on our team. This is our person." Yeah, she's gonna be in for, and that is another reason why President Biden should have went on into Arizona boldly and preached the gospel of what he was attempting to do, instead of allowing this woman to be the president, shadow president on most days. And Senator Manchin being the vice president on other days. I mean, look at it. The Democrats in Arizona get it. Glory be to God, though. Like you said, this is a good news story.
Yeah, thankfully. I mean, it's at least it's consistent with other polling that we've seen for the past few months. And by the way, the primary challenge would be a few years away. So that seems like it would help her. She still has a lot of time to do damage, though. Think about what she's already done. Build Back Better isn't done. She's going to make that worse. God only knows if Biden ever gets to choose a Supreme Court justice, what effect she'll end up having on that. Like, she could still do a lot of damage to herself.
Yeah, she could. Or she could see the light, John. I don't know.
Yeah, I believe that. If donations change massively. I don't see the results. Yeah, well, Hopefully. Anyway, I don't see the results, so those are gonna have to wait. But Nina, as always, I want to thank you for taking time out and joining us. I feel a little bit better about the state of the country thanks to you. So thank you for that.
No, thank you. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody, to them and who they love. And if you can help somebody in need, please do so.
Definitely so. The only help I can provide is perhaps a little bit more news. So that's what we'll have for you after this break.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.